Committee to order. Good afternoon. We'll call the Senate Special Committee on Rail Belt Energy System together. What is it? About 3:32 on the 27th of January, 2020. Today, with us, we have Senators Gray Jackson, Senator Michicki, Senator Schauer, Senator Giesel, and myself, Senator Coghill. Representative Hopkins, you introduce your members.
Thank you, Senator Coghill. Today, with the House Special Committee on Energy, we have joining us Representative Lincoln, Representative Zolkowski, Representative Pruitt, and myself, Representative Hopkins.
Thank you. We do have quorum to do business. I know that we have one member from the House that just can't make it today. I'm sorry to hear that. We also have with us today the House records. We have Butch Carver and Taylor with the is Kathy
Kelly.
I'm sorry, Taylor Kelly. Yes. And I have been known to assign new names to people, so it's always good to have that. Today, we're going to hear a conversation on the rail belt system. We'll be dealing with Senate Bill 124 and House Bill 151, Joint Committee. It's good to work with Representative Hopkins on this particular issue. So this will be the first of two joint meetings, with another one scheduled on 29th of January on Wednesday. And I want to extend my thanks to the Senate Finance Committee. This is a big desk to sit behind. It's great, but to accommodate the size of the committee, this has been very nice, and I appreciate it. Also, for me, from Senator Giesel's office, I have Rena Miller, who has been key in my understanding of this, together with my staff, Reneva Moss, who is with me in this particular committee, and I want to thank them too. Senate Bill 123 and House Bill 151 are the things that we'll be dealing with today. We'll be dealing with invited testimony. We already had the layout of the bill. Representative Sponholz, welcome. The first thing we did was lay out the bill before the Senate committee. I don't know if the House has had a chance to do that just yet.
Yes, Senator, we have. We adopted the CS on Thursday and went over with the RCA as well.
Okay, thank you. Prior to this meeting, we've been working obviously with the House on trying to coordinate the way that 151 and 123 would come together. I also know that there's been a lot of work from the utilities and interest groups way before the collaboration between the House and the Senate, and that work is highly respected and quite frankly found its place in these particular pieces of the legislation. So I'm grateful for all the hard work that everybody's put in, and this is how to make Alaska work better. And so I think both committees have made that commitment. I'm going off script. So they write it, but man, it's hard for me to read those things because it just is. If the kid from Nenana comes out in me. The plan is to both of us together hear from the utilities on the structure of the bill, the processes that will help it become better, and any recommendations they have. Today we're going to start the meeting off with some of the stakeholders who decided to do it jointly. They're going to do a PowerPoint with us. So if we could have John Burns, Brian Hickey, and Julie Esty both all come forward here. The intention is to have them go through this PowerPoint together. And I guess the question I'll have for you is who's going to be the primary spokesman and how shall we do the questions as you roll through this thing. So please introduce yourself, put yourself on the record, and then we'll begin this conversation.
Thank you, Senator, and welcome everybody. My name is Julie Esty. I work for Matanuska Electric Association. And I think true to our rail belt roots, there's not gonna be one specific lead presenter. We're gonna share the load. And please ask questions as you'd like. So again, my name is Julie Esty, and it's great to look around this table and see so many faces that have been working on this issue for years. Some, you know, maybe even a decade or more on some of these issues, just as we have. We are appreciative of your attention and your priority on this issue. The work that we are doing here is important, and it's work that has been tried and failed for decades. And I think what everybody can agree on is that we need to do it different. While there's been a lot of progress, we can do better. And that is why we are here, is to have those discussions not only among ourselves as the utilities, but with our policymakers and leaders, as well as other stakeholders. So we've embarked on this pretty intense process. Sometimes it looked a little like family counseling, where we've gotten all the issues out on the table. And really, instead of sitting at opposite sides of the table with our arms crossed, we've learned how to share our concerns and find solutions that actually we can all live with. In doing so, we've been able to make substantial progress pretty quickly over the last few months. And we're going to be talking about that today. So in our presentation, we'll be discussing the progress that we've made to date. And when I say we can only speak on behalf of the utilities, but really we to us also incorporates stakeholders. We've had many hours of meetings, listening to lots of voices and incorporating feedback. We'll talk to you a little bit about the Rail Belt Reliability Council, which we are developing in tandem with this legislation in hopes that it will be designated as the ERO as this legislation is passed, and what our next steps are in moving that forward. Then we'll be addressing policymakers, you all. How can you help in this process? How can we help you? And then our thoughts on the existing legislation, Senate Bill 123 and House Bill 151. We greatly appreciate the leadership in getting those on the table as a vehicle for discussion. We did forward some comments for consideration, and have definitely heard loud and clear that there was there was some overreach in our comments. We went really down into the details. And so what we'd like to say is the comments that we provided, please take them as they were intended. This is insight into our thinking. We think that the legislation is very solid as presented. We think that there are a few adjustments that we would put on the table for your consideration to improve it and help with the implementation of once everything's passed, the implementation of the legislation into practice. And we'll be talking a little bit about those as well. So without further ado, I'm going to pass it to Brian Hickey with Chugach Electric, who has been doing this for decades, and he can talk to us a little bit about what's been happening.
Thank you. Senator, I appreciate the time that the legislature's taken out of your busy schedules to look at this issue. It is important to the Rail Belt. My name is Brian Hickey. I'm the Chief Operating Officer at Chugach Electric Association. And I actually went to work in the Rail Belt before we were interconnected with Fairbanks. So I've seen a lot of things over this last 35 or 40 years. And I do think that we are closer to doing the things in a better way than we've ever been in my career. So I'm excited to be here at this point. I'm going to walk through I'm going to walk through a few slides here. I did want to make a couple comments up front. One thing that's important to understand, and bear with me, I'm an engineer by training, and so, but I'll try to keep it at a very high level. It's important to understand that a grid is a single machine, physical machine, and it operates in perfect synchronism. And if it doesn't do that, then it will collapse and black out. You'll have a large-scale power outages, which were common prior to the early 1980s. In that intervening 30 years, I think the Rail Belt utilities, 35 years, have done a great job of keeping reliability high and cost low. Our metrics rival any of those at the much larger, more resilient grids in the lower 48. So we've done a lot of things right. We've had our challenges, and I'd be the first to admit that. I think the electric industry is changing right now. A lot of things have changed since 1985. We didn't have personal computers or cell phones or the internet or any of those things back then. We now have all of those things, and things are going to change much faster. And so I think this organization and the way we've structured it is a vehicle that will help us move the grid into the future in a way that will be better for all of the ratepayers, all the members of the rail belt. So with that, I'll kind of walk through some of the progress that we've made to date. We've been working on this for quite some time. In 2014, the Intertie Management Committee drafted and adopted open access rules for the Alaska Intertie.
Ryan, before you go further, let me just welcome Zach Fields, Senator Representative Fields. I'm sorry, I took your responsibility from you. And let me say this too, both to you and Julie and John, as you're here, and the other utilities. We, all of us in this committee, have benefited from a lot of hard work. Every day that the power comes on is unnoticed. Every day that it's not is noticed. And there's just not that many that go highly noticed. And so I think most of us are very grateful for that. We also know that wind and solar and any other way we can get power into that grid is something we're interested in, and so are you. And so we know that we're growing. Of course, I was born here, as many of us were, and we have had the benefit of those growing pains from fuel sources to stringing wires. And so most of us understand that we're just at a place now where the machine has to work together. And so this is our attempt at drawing what the best skeletal working relationship can be for you to work in those circumstances. So hopefully you don't think that we're trying to bully anything, but we really do truly appreciate the struggle of growing pains. And so as we put the solution forward, what you said, Julie, was important. We do like to get in on what you're thinking, because all those meetings between utilities, we don't get to be in on. But the result of those meetings, we get to see. And so as we go forward, I'm going to respect that as much as I can, while still saying, what can we do to describe how to go forward, and how do we keep from getting so prescriptive that it's not going to work? And so just for your information, most of us truly appreciate the growing pains of where we got to, and many of us have appreciated the reliability that has come with it. So just to let you know, we really, truly are looking forward to a good work product out of this.
We appreciate the comments.
Thank you. So to walk through some of the progress that we have made so far.
We have Senator Schauer joining with us. I'm sorry to keep interrupting you. That's to throw you off your game a little bit. It's the frequency modulation that we have here.
Yeah. Travels at the speed of light, yes. So just to kind of, I'll be brief about this, but we did adopt open access rules for the Intertie in 2014. In 2018, in the intervening 4 years, we adopted a new set of reliability standards and submitted them to the Regulatory Commission. Those were consensus standards that were developed amongst the six utilities. And within those standards, compliance is mandated no later than 1 year after the establishment of an ERO. And so we were thinking about an ERO then, and we are in support of it now. Up until the point that the ERO is stood up, those reliability standards are voluntary, as they have been since the first standards were adopted in the late 80s and early 90s. In addition to that, after we completed the reliability standards, we undertook a review of cybersecurity standards for the rail belt. We engaged a nationally recognized consultant to help us with that. We drafted a complete set of cybersecurity standards and physical infrastructure security standards that are based on the North American Electric Reliability Corporation standards, which are used in the broader North American, all the North American ISOs in those areas. We're currently working on identifying gaps internally between our practices at each utility and the standards, and we have a working group that meets monthly, and they're shepherding this process forward. We believe it will take us about 3 years to bring the utilities up to the current level of cybersecurity standards that are currently required if you're a FERC-regulated utility operating in the lower 48, Mexico, or Canada.
So Brian, these are national standards that
yes,
we will try to get close to under this reliability organization, true?
That's correct. And what we've done in each case, both with the operating reliability standards for the electric system as well as the cybersecurity standards, we have to take into account the unique nature of the rail belt, that it's an isolated grid that's not connected to any other sources. And also our scale is much smaller than other areas. For example, the ERCOT system has 65,000 megawatts of peak generation. We have about 750. With that comes that lack of economy of scale comes a focus on cost competitiveness. So we take those standards and we take what we, our subject matter experts, believe are the very best parts of them, the things that we really need to adopt, and then we adopt those with thinking about how is this going to affect the ratepayers at the end of the day. So we've completed with that. That work is ongoing right now. And the last thing I wanted to talk a little bit about was the power pool. That's been a subject of some interest. For those of you who aren't familiar with it, a power pool is a contractual arrangement between distinct utilities that requires that they pool their loads and generation and dispatch the next most efficient megawatt to meet each megawatt of demand. And then it has a contractual settlement process as to how the benefits and costs of that are divided up amongst the utilities. So it takes the day-to-day transaction, the day-to-day transaction model, and it puts it into a more efficient model. Chugach, MLMP, and MEA were working on a pool up until we embarked on the acquisition of MLMP. Chugach embarked on the acquisition of MLMP. At that point in time, it was felt like the settlement process, which is fairly complex, should be put on hold until we were one company, if that's what we were going to be, because that settlement process would have had to been rewritten. We do intend to take that up as soon as the acquisition is approved by the RCA, if it is. And at that point in time, we believe it will take us about 180 days from what we would say close to actually day one, to actually put the pool in place. So we are working on that. It's important to note that the acquisition of MLMP by Chugach brings about 75% of the pool benefits in fuel savings to the rail belt immediately. We just begin dispatching as one load on day one, and we are preparing now to do that on day one should the regulatory commission approve the acquisition. And Golden Valley, I should be clear that Golden Valley and Homer also participated in those discussions. They were involved up to the point where we actually got to settlement, and then they decided to step out and let us finish the settlement process and then come back in after the fact, because they would transact with the pool but not be a part of it potentially.
Brian, Senator Gray Jackson has a question.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. It's just a question about the closing of the sale. How close do you think we are? Hope that's a fair enough question.
Through the chair, should the RCA issue an order approving the acquisition on February 28th, which is the date they are intending on issuing an order, we believe our day one would be May 29th. And we've been working, had functional teams from both organizations. I think we have 14 functional teams. We have members from both Chugach and MLMP. They're meeting weekly and sometimes multiple times a week to lay out everything it would take to bring the two companies together on day one, which would be May 29th.
Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Please continue, Brian.
And with that, I'm going to hand it off to my colleague and friend from Golden Valley.
Thank you, Brian. Chairman, members, appreciate the opportunity to present today. My name is John Burns. Vice President and General Counsel for Golden Valley Electric Association out of Fairbanks. We serve Delta all the way down to Cantwell. Brian's done a very good job of sharing with you where we have been. As a utility, as the different utilities within the rail belt, we have worked collaboratively on many issues over the years. Where we are going, though, is an incredibly bright future. And so in December of 2019, all six utilities joined together in signing the Rail Belt Reliability Council Memorandum of Agreement. The RRC will be an applicant for the Electric Reliability Organization on the Rail Belt, and it will serve with a balanced board, a utility and non-utility board. And they're focused on accomplishing the following four immediate tasks. This is going to be the primary focus immediately. Establish, administer, and enforce reliability standards. Develop, adopt, and administer open access rules, system cost allocation procedures, and interconnection protocols. Develop and adopt an integrated resource plan for the entire Rail Belt electric grid. And finally, perform a definitive cost-benefit analysis of Rail Belt-wide regional security-constrained economic dispatch. Now, I say those are the primary.
John, before you go forward, for those listening in and for those of us on the committee, what you just described as the Rail Belt Reliability Council is contemplated in the bill as electric reliability organization.
Correct.
And I just wanted to put that down clear for those listening in.
And that's the RRC, as I said, will be the entity once it's formed that will be actually submitting the application with the RCA to be the ERO. And although I've described the four tasks as being what the RRC will immediately and primarily focus on, we, as the ODT, want to express to you the possibilities that the RRC represents and can achieve are truly endless. The collaborative process that the RRC represents and envisions will facilitate conversations in which, as this body knows, conversations build relationships and relationships build trust. And that trust is that what will achieve, which will help us to achieve the possibilities that the RRC is all about.
John,
yep.
We are heavy with acronyms in the legislature. And every once in a while, I'm going to ask you to go through that acronym. We went through the ODT very quickly, and that is very different than what is contemplated under an organization contemplated in the bill. So this is primarily utility-driven, true?
Correct. The organization development team, and in fact, the next slide emphasizes that. There's two questions that we've regularly received, and many of you may have, and that's the why and the how this RRC, the Reliability, Rail Belt Reliability Council MOU came to be. And the truth of the matter is that most of the people in this room, in front of me and behind me, played a significant role in that process. The legislature and the RCA recognized the need for reform. Independent power producers and other non-utility entities were demanding a voice in decisions that affected the rail belt. Ratepayers were becoming increasingly frustrated, and the rail belt utilities themselves recognized the need to propose and to embrace reforms that bring us into the future. So that process, the Rail Belt Reliability Council is through this organizational development process. And again, I apologize for the abbreviations, the ODT.
Just trying to be clear. Thank you.
No, I appreciate it. And please, at any time. The organizational development team was comprised of representatives from the six Rail Belt utilities. And it was established to begin the formation of the RRC, the Rail Belt Reliability Council. Committee's, the ODT's focus was to develop consensus among the utilities, first among the utilities, as well as other stakeholders in forming what will be the implementation committee or the first board that will stand up the RRC that will develop the foundational documents, the code of conducts, the bylaws, the articles, the different documents that govern the committee work. You've got to have that in place, and then the RRC will file articles. The organization development team representatives met with utilities and non-utility stakeholders, as Brian described, for over a course of a year, many, many, many meetings, endless hours. And those stakeholders included the RCA, AEA, REAP, AGPERG, IPPs, and others. And as I said, it was on numerous occasions.
Before we go, I will go over those acronyms real briefly after the comment from Representative Sponholz.
Yeah.
A question.
Thank you. I actually want to back up to slide six for a second. As the senator was referencing, there's a lot of terms. We move from committee to committee to committee, and everybody has their own acronyms and terms. And there was a new one referenced in bullet four here that I wanted to understand a little bit better. Perform a definitive cost-benefit analysis of a rail belt wide or regional security constrained economic dispatch. Could you describe what that second regional security constrained economic dispatch term means?
Yeah, it's a mouthful. Brian?
Yeah. So a economic dispatch is a term for dispatching the next most efficient megawatt to meet the load. However, given the lengthy nature of the rail belt, runs from Delta to Bradley Lake on Kachemak Bay, and with single transmission lines, there are points that get congested, and you can't move enough power from one region to the other. And so in a security constrained economic dispatch, you might have to start an uneconomic unit in Anchorage because you couldn't get enough Bradley Lake, for example, off the Kenai at a given moment. So that's still the most economic dispatch you can do while recognizing the security constraint of not overloading a transmission line.
Got it.
Okay. So the security is the overload. And
yep.
When we go from one to the other, for those who are recording us, it's best if you just reiterate your name. Don't have to make a big deal out of it. Since we're giving multiple testimony, it's important that our transcribers get that very clearly.
So that was Brian Hickey from Chugach.
Thank you, Brian. All right, John.
John Burns. The efforts of the ODT committee resulted in a signed RRC MOU. The utility signed, all utilities signed it, and it was finalized on December 18th, 2019. And it was filed with the RCA on December 20, 2019. So it is a significant moment from the standpoint of the railroad utilities coming together and focusing on the future.
And we have, I think as a committee members, we've all got a copy of that MOU. It's dense. But that's your language as we try to understand how you're talking about it. For those who are listening, the RCA is the Regulatory Commission of Alaska. The REAP, we will have them testify in front of us. We will have members from other groups. And I'm trying to go, it was the fourth bullet. Go back and take a look at all those. ACPERG, I think, was one of the other Alaska public interest group, and then there was one other independent power producers. So, and they will all have a chance to testify. But I just wanted it clear that those people will also get a chance. And this MOU is between utilities, but they had some input, as I understand it.
Absolutely. What we it was important first that the railroad utilities be able to come together, and as Julie Zesty described it, it did seem as if it was family counseling at times, because the utilities had to come together and really grapple with some very difficult issues in reaching this consensus document. As we did that, once we got to the point where we felt comfortable with it, we went out and expanded the role to bring in other stakeholders to get their insight as to the MOU process and concerns that they may have had. And the result of it was that we ended up modifying the MOU in several different instances. Obviously, not all comments were agreed upon, but there was a genuine effort to make sure that we first heard. You know, that's the important part of communication, is to really take the time to listen, and we did. And so we ended up with the final version of the MOU that was circulated and signed on December 18th, 2019.
Thank you.
The Railroad Reliability Council will be governed by 12 board members, with the CEO providing a tie-breaking vote. Those 12 members will be the six railroad utilities, the Alaska Energy Authority, two independent power producers, one organization advocating for consumer interest, and two independent, non-affiliated members. In addition to that 12 board, those 12 board members, the Regulatory Commission of Alaska and RAPA will hold non-voting ex officio seats on the board, which is important because as we go through this process, it's important for us to understand what the commission's perspective is on different issues as well as the legal perspective.
And John, RAPA is?
I'm sorry?
RAPA, the acronym RAPA.
Regulatory Affairs for Public Advocacy.
Yeah.
So they're through the Attorney General's office, they represent the public advocacy side of it. And so the board composition may seem expansive, and there's been some criticism about the numbers on it, but it reflects, the reality is it reflects the broad spectrum of different interests that either impact or are impacted by having a reliable, robust electric grid. So it was important to have an expansive and balanced board.
John, I have a question from Representative Bonholz.
Thank you. Through the chair, would you like to describe who the two independent non-affiliated members will be?
The way it's described is any entity or individual that has knowledge relative to electric issues could be engineers. You want to add to that engineers or?
Yeah, finance folks, people with cybersecurity experience. It would depend on what the board felt was required or necessary at that point in time. But there is a list in the MOU of requirements and they basically are that preferences given to Alaska residents. You should have some knowledge of the rail belt and some knowledge of the process that formed the RRC. You cannot be working for or part of any organization that is exchanging power or delivering power in the rail belt or one of the stakeholder groups. So the idea is to have two independent, non-affiliated professionals on the board.
And through the chair, this is Julie Esty. Those will initially be chosen for the implementation committee. The way that it's spelled out in the MOU, though we will receive applications. They should all be due on February 17th. We'll go into that. And then those independent, not affiliated, will be chosen by one of the IPP representatives, the consumer advocate position, and the Alaska Energy Authority. So those three will form a subcommittee and pick those unaffiliated positions.
Representative Hopkins also has a point to make and a question, I think.
Thank you. Yeah, on the previous slide, 7 and the last bullet point, the signed MOU was filed with the RCA on December 20th, 2019. Without the RCA having statutory authority, as we see it right now, to regulate an ERO, what was your hope to gain out of submitting that ERO, that MOU with the RCA? How about that for acronyms?
Just to provide notice to the RCA that we had succeeded in achieving what I think many felt was unlikely to be achieved. And so it was the placeholder to let the RCA know where we're at.
And through the chair, process. We did it as an informational filing. So they'd been engaged in the process. They had opened a docket back in 2015 that we had all been utilizing as the mechanism for conversations in the public theater. So yes, it was an informational filing. No adjudicatory request was made.
And just for the testifiers, for those listening in, what you have described under this Reliability Council as anticipated statutorily as a reliability organization. So you have put kind of the meat and bones onto a question that we put in statute, basically. Just to let people know, as you were describing it, we did not designate it exactly the way that you have brought it out, but we have asked for a variety of different things as you have put it in here, with a different designation to it. So just for those listening in, what you're doing is complementing what this statute has contemplated, that's all, for what
Absolutely.
It's worth.
And through the chair, thank you for those comments. Our goal was to have a parallel path that could be a cohesive solution with not only the legislation, but also indications from stakeholders and the RCA for what they were looking for. So yes, we've been trying to keep the lines of communication open as we move forward so that the goals and the components were aligned, but we do recognize, as it's stated in the current legislation, we will only be all we can do is apply to be this.
Right.
Once it's passed, hopefully passed into law, the RCA will have the authority to accept applications and choose. So we are just earnestly hoping that we will be selected from those applicants.
Please continue.
The Chair, John Burns again. Another question that many may be wondering is, why is the Rail Belt Reliability Council important? First, let me assure you what the Rail Belt Reliability Council is not. It is not an artifice intended to deflect the legislature or the RCA's attention away from necessary rail belt reform. The RRC reflects a series of commitments that are being made by the rail belt utilities to propose and to embrace meaningful, deliberative changes on the rail belt electric grid. Specifically, the RRC represents a regulatory compact, a contractual commitment with the state of Alaska. It represents a commitment that the utilities will be bound by the decisions of the RRC. It represents a commitment of the utilities to support statutory language to provide the RCA authority to regulate the RRC as described in the Memorandum of Understanding. It is a commitment of the utilities to be inclusive of a variety of perspectives in decisions relating to rail belt bulk electric system, and it is a commitment of the utilities to participate with one another and with non-utility stakeholders to achieve benefits for ratepayers across the state. So with that, let me turn it back over to Julie Estee.
And thank you, John, through the chair. This is Julie Estee with Matanuska Electric Association. The items that John read out, that represents a sea change for the rail belt utilities. We have definitely evolved through the process of letting those other voices in to a place that we are ready to do this. In other testimony, Brian Hickey's called this that let go moment. This represents a big change for currently we have a lot of control over what we do in our specific region, in our specific service territory. This is not only opening that up to the other utilities to work together and suggest other things, but also to those other voices. And we've come a long way with that. And it's because of the trust that was built not only with the utilities, but also with these other stakeholders. And where in the past we've done an effective job at working together operationally to keep the system going, what we have not necessarily done is been inclusive in our decision making. And so that's not only what we're doing with these other utilities, but also opening the conversation up to lots of different perspectives. So just to keep going on the next step. So as I mentioned, we are planning, we're moving forward with the RRC as a parallel path to this legislation and ideally the establishment of an ERO. This timeline was established in the MOU signed by all six utilities where already occurring right now, a public notice has gone out to the different regions requesting applications for the non-utility seats, or at least the undesignated non-utility seats. The Alaska Energy Authority is a non-utility seat, but that's a designated seat. So the independent power producers, the independent unaffiliated groups, and the consumer advocacy groups, we have the requests for applications out. It's been sent to the RCA listserv. It's been in all of the papers, and it's also on our website as well. The Alaska Power Association has been hosting that for us and helping us because we're not an entity yet. So we appreciate their help in that.
Julie, before you go further, yes. I have a question. I think it was Representative Lincoln.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I, with a four-year-old daughter, when I heard you say let it go, I instantly flashed that Frozen song. I don't know if you've heard that, but I just like, pictured you guys singing that together.
It's really great to watch these guys duet on that.
My question is going back you don't have to go back to slide 8, but in slide 8 you describe the makeup of the board and said initially that will be the composition. You've got a schedule here for filling that out, but I'm just curious, if it were to change, would that be in response to the legislation perhaps defining that, or RCA, or is it, how would you anticipate it changing, or under what circumstances?
So we are, the way the MOU is working, we are establishing the implementation committee. And that, so sorry, this is Julie Esty, Matanuska Electric Association, through the chair. And what that MOU states is, here's what the implementation committee will look like. And it's imagined that that implementation committee will become the first board as the organization is stood up. The implementation committee will also be going through a process. Again, this will be utility and non-utility stakeholders that defines bylaws, defines articles of incorporation, and those will be within the context of the MOU, but there's definitely the latitude as new information is present. If that needs to adjust, it could adjust. We also understand that this is something that we're hoping lives for a very long time, and so ideally the bylaws will include the ability to evolve. But right now, we feel as though the balance is a negotiated place. In previous legislation, there was legislation introduced that was hardly any utilities. The utilities in our mind think that we, in our previous position was, well, we've got this. Why do we need anybody else? And so this balance board is really a negotiation of both sides to come together and say, let's have an equal number that feels comfortable to everybody now, and see how the system evolves and how the needs for the organization evolve. Do either of you two want to add to that?
Brian Hickey, Chugach Electric, through the chair. I also think that what you've seen in other entities like this in the lower 48, the independent system operators, as market segments coalesce and form associations and have a function in the market, they apply for a seat and the board is expanded to accept them onto it. We do have language in the MOU that requires a balancing of interests on the board. And so, as we move forward, we would seek ways to actually balance that. If another utility came on or went off, there are several options. You could eliminate one of the non-affiliated positions or fill it with another utility member. So there's some flexibility in the MOU as to how we would manage the composition of that board. And I think going forward, as I said, as market segments coalesce into distinct groups, if there's a need, other seats can be created on the board. And you've seen that. The other organizations in the lower 48 have been operating since the mid to late 90s, so we have about 20 years of experience there to draw from, and we've done a fair amount of research into that, and we're pretty comfortable that the board can be flexible.
So, Brian, the difference between what you're describing and what we've asked for in the bill is we've asked for a balanced board, and we've given a short description. What you're talking about is how that balancing act begins to take shape, and the MOU is kind of into the weeds, but you're right. People need to understand you're proposing to organize something that will answer what we're asking for in this statute. And so we have Senator Ray Jackson and Senator Machicki that also had some questions.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. How many IPPs are there out there?
Through the chair, Brian Hickey. There are a handful that we know of. There are some small ones. Some are larger. Siri has the wind farm on Fire Island, Delta Wind up in Fairbanks. There's the solar folks in Willow, which have a 1 megawatt solar project. There are a couple folks who are trying to develop a hydroelectric project in Hatcher Pass. So there are a handful of them in the rail belt right now, and Julie Esty from MEA might have a better, most of them are on their system, so she might have an actual count.
We have four currently operating on our system. This is Julie Esty, through the chair, and lots of applications. So there's a lot of interest. And one of the things that John spoke about was the consistent interconnection standards. The more consistency we can provide on the system, the more that it helps folks come on. The more certainty there is, the more it builds investment around it. And so ideally the work that we're doing now helps that investment grow and helps the predictability of doing business on the rail belt. So we anticipate that we're only going to see more requests.
Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
I have a power plant in Fairbanks that is an independent power producer, coal plant. Senator Machicki.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Just curious for any of you, we remain very general in the bill about the board, but I'm board makeup is sort of a key to success sometimes. Just wondering, and we'll be discussing this, whether or not perhaps we should capture the makeup of the board in the legislation. Your opinion, but one more opinion I have for you is the CEO provides a tie-breaking vote, which eliminates consensus, forcing you all to work it out, and shifts the board to a majority rule, which is sometimes problematic in this type of an organization. Just wondering, are you already sort of giving up consensus, or is it worth perhaps beginning with a consensus without a majority, without a CEO with a tie-breaking vote, sort of forcing you all in these early stages when things might be the most contentious to really make friends as opposed to sort of making friends?
Through the chair, you know, in the development of the organizational documents, you know, your point is well taken. There are certain decisions that may likely require a supermajority vote or more than just a, you know, a majority vote. And so, as the process evolves, I think you're going to get those kind of dialogues. We thought it was important to achieve balance. The balance board is good there, but at the same time, you want to make sure you move forward. And there will be times that you know, we can't. It may be that we hope it's rare, but there may be instances where that tie-breaking vote will need to be made. But understand that the CEO is chosen by the board as a whole, and so that CEO is not a utility or a non-utility. You've got to get that consensus from the board to hire that individual. So we're optimistic that the individual that is hired will have a broad, perspective, and that's going to be key. With regards to your question as to whether it ought to be in the legislation mandated specifically what the construct of the organizational or the governing structure is, you know, that's certainly your prerogative. I think, you know, oftentimes it's important to give broad policy directives and not get into the minutia of it. But you know, that's that requires a little a large degree of trust that this RRC is going to achieve what we all believe that it can. So that's a balance that this body's got to make.
And just to respond to that through the chair, Senator, during the implementation committee phase, there will not be a CEO. There will not be an organization yet, so it will be more of a balance. In addition, one of the items that you'll see if you're a glutton for punishment and read through our entire red line document that we sent in is some provisions to make sure that the minority opinion in any decision has a voice in the process. So as we propose a solution, whether it be the integrated resource plan or a reliability standard to the RCA, the minority opinion or opinions, if there's multiple minority opinions, will have a very visible role in that and must have a voice in that process as well. So we agree, because I think there's, as you look around with these let go moments, you know, there's a lot of trust of who can be forming alliances, and I'm sure you guys deal with that often, actually. But we're really working to try to mitigate as much of that as possible so that we are making decisions based on the good of the group.
I think the thing to go ahead, Brian.
Through the chair, Brian Hickey from Chugach. To follow on that, I think one of the as a system operator, former system operator, and a more of a technical guy, this organization is going to be developing the operating guidelines that are used to actually operate the system. That tells us when we raise the voltage at a certain place in the system, when we lower it, why we do it, and how we do it. Those types of decisions Mr. Berner's point have to be made you want to have as much consensus as you can. When we put forward a reliability standard that's put forth to solve a problem somewhere, there is usually some reason that's been done and it needs to be done fairly quickly. And so I think that drives to a point where there may be times when someone has to make a decision and say, yeah, we have to do this. And we have tried to wrap in the concept of both minority and majority opinions always being expressed when that happens. Obviously, we want it to be consensus, and we hope it will be. But there is an operating component to this organization.
And I think the thing to keep us mindful of is in this particular bill that we're testifying on, these two bills, we have two new authorities coming up. One of them is for these organizations to do both the planning and the organizational structure under the auspices of new authority given to RCA. And so that is not going to be something done in a vacuum, I can tell you. All right. Do you have to follow up, Senator Machicki?
Just a very brief follow-up. Nothing creates trust more than a well-constructed contract. And I'm listening after 40 years of some pretty intense struggles. Just want to make sure that everyone has an equal voice, relatively equal voice. So this is early in our process as well, but those are questions that were important to me. So I appreciate your answers very much. Thank you.
Points well taken. Please continue. By the way, we have several slides to get through, and I have at least three people that I'd like to have give some testimony before our day is done here. So.
Thank you. This is Julie Estill. I'll continue through the chair. And thank you, Senator Machicki, for those comments. It's great for us to be thinking. Every new perspective lends us more insight, so appreciated. So again, just to look at the timeline briefly, the goal is to have the implementation committee formed by the end of May, or by mid-May, and starting their work by the end of May, with the goal of being done by December 2020 as far as having all of the foundational documents complete to stand up the organization. One of the points you'll note in our red line is potential suggestion is currently there is a date given for the RCA to move forward forming their own if no applications come forth. And we're hoping to extend that deadline a little bit to allow the committee to do its work. But Brian will get into that in a little while. So here's where we talk a little bit. And, you know, as I looked at this, this was, of course, by our perspective, how you guys can help this move along, but it's also how we can help you achieve the policy goals that you have. So I'd really like to look at this as how we can be working together. So here is what our goals are as we see the legislation, and we do believe all six utilities at Senate Bill 123 and House Bill 151 are the correct vehicle to move this forward. One is to establish the regulatory framework for the RRC to operate under the RCA's regulatory authority. We firmly believe that a regulatory process and having this under the RCA will ensure the success and ensure integrity of the process. So that is a critical part of the legislation. Provide a mechanism to enforce consistent reliability standards, facility cybersecurity standards. Reliability is just another name for redundancy. How much redundancy do you want in the system? Well, we all want a lot of redundancy, but how much can we pay for? So this organization will be looking at that. And right now there are a set of reliability standards we've all agreed to, but there's no enforcement mechanism. And so this, we are hoping that the ability to enforce the reliability standards is also a component that comes out of through this legislation through the RCA. Authorize the RRC to execute a robust, transparent, integrated resource planning process and support the results. That is the process of all of us coming together and looking at what the system should look like in the future, both transmission and generation, inclusive of all the voices, and going through a very robust, open, transparent process. Our goal is to move that forward and have that process be given to the RCA. And then provide RCA pre-approval of projects that are consistent with the integrated resource plan or reliability standards. We'll be submitting, ideally, reliability standards that are the basis for how the system runs, and that the integrity of the system will be moving forward integrated resource planning. And the thought that once something has been approved in either of those, that that could be pre-approved through the RCA and allow us to move forward with that as a project is something that we are also open to. And allowing the RRC time to accomplish our goals, but providing discrete timelines. One of the key components of the RCA's letter to the legislature in June 2015 was to allow for voluntary efforts. There is a lot of paddling happening underneath the ducks, and there's a lot of movement going on, even though from the outside it's sometimes hard to see. So our goal is to, but we also understand that the utilities work very well with deadlines. We're rule followers by nature, so if you give us the time that we need to produce something, we'll do it. So having those timelines out ahead of us, we think is a very appropriate role for the state to play, both from the RCA standpoint and the legislature. So providing those timelines that if we don't get it done, then there will be movement. And that's all of these components already exist in the bill. So now I'll hand it over to Brian Hickey to talk about specific thoughts on the bills.
Thank you, Julie. Brian Hickey from Chugach Electric through the chair. First, I want to add my apology if some of the adjustments and the way that we presented them was inappropriate. We did not intend that to happen. Honestly, we had this process for negotiating the RRC MOU, and it involved consensus drafting of a document and then circulating among utilities and then with the stakeholders and then with the RCA and then back to the utilities. And so when SB 123 came up, we just put it into the same mill and did the same thing and came out with a document which was not in any way intended to. It was hopefully you'll accept it as what it was meant to be.
It's not a consensus though.
Yeah, and I wanted to emphasize that we took the document, both the RRC MOU and our version of SB 123, to the stakeholders, and we incorporated some of their comments. I don't believe they've endorsed those documents as documents that they, I'm certain that they have not endorsed those documents as their documents, and you may hear some of that later this week. What I can say is that we met with them. We did line-by-line review of it. We took their comments seriously. We listened to what they had to say, and we adopted whatever the utilities as a unanimously in a consensus fashion could agree to. And so there may be things in our version of the MOU as well as in our version of SB 123 that some of the stakeholders disagree with, because there were some things that we couldn't come to agreement on their particular desire. So I just wanted to make clear that we weren't.
Representative Sokolsky, you had a question before we go forward.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So I guess I just want to make sure, Mr. Hickey, that I understand, since it's Monday. So all of these suggested amendments that you're about to review were developed in consensus among all of the utilities that are part of the MOU that's been signed. Is that correct?
Brian Hickey, Chugach, through the chair. What occurred was these are changes that the six utilities agreed on. We then took them out to the stakeholders and asked them their opinions on them. They provided input to us. We went back and revised those changes to the degree that we could all agree on from the inputs from the stakeholders. We then took them to the RCA and went through it with each of the commissioners line by line and took their comments and brought them back. And then we had a final drafting session Friday afternoon with ourselves and the stakeholders who could make it, and we incorporated the comments we could all agree on into that. So it is the best that the unanimous utilities could come to agreement with the other stakeholders, if I made that clear as mud.
Through the chair, just for clarification, what the red line version is represents the organization development team's consensus document, and as Mr. Hickey indicated, we tried to bring in as many of the comments and from other stakeholders through that collaborative dialogue. But it is the document of the organizational development team, the six utilities, that, as Brian's indicated, adds, you know, brings in as much as from the others as possible. But by no means is this, and we don't want to represent it as being the document that agreed to by all stakeholders. So Thank you for the question, though.
So John and Brian and Julie, I find myself in a little bit of a dilemma here. I'm an hour into this, and we're now getting to the suggested language. And remind me again how many hours you put into these suggested changes. And I do have many other people that I would like to testify from other utilities. How can I characterize these in a short time frame, or should we reserve those for another time to go through point by point? Because what I'd like to do is look at them in the draft that we have now compared to the blue and red line that you gave us, which to me is a non-starter, mainly because it doesn't fit our drafting style. Mm-hmm. And so how would you like to see these at a high level before I asked other people to testify?
Brian Hickey from Chugach, through the chair, or to the chair. I can give you sort of the high level of the pillars that we use to draft them, and perhaps they'll give you some guidance and you can read them. I don't have
to take about 10 minutes or so or less, because I'd like to get at least two or three other people up to testify.
So what we attempted to do was first take SB 123 and conform it to the MOU, which is fairly detailed and down in the weeds. So we looked at SB 123, we looked at the MOU, and we looked for places where those two didn't agree, and we tried to make changes to resolve those. Next, we had sort of four pillars that we were working off of as we went through SB 123, and they were essentially that the outcome, either of reliability standards or integrated resource plans, should be developed from the bottom up and not from the top down, primarily because this is an operating entity and it has to work on the ground. So the way we addressed that in our revisions to the MOU was to, which was our second pillar, was let's not reinvent the wheel. Let's use existing regulatory procedures, which are time-tested and we know how to work within. And so we focused on the tariff process, which is a process whereby a utility submits a tariff. The RCA has 45 days to open a docket of investigation into it. If they don't do that, it automatically becomes law. If they do open a docket of investigation in it, they don't modify the tariff. They investigate it, provide comments, and return it to the utility to actually work on it. So we were trying to get – that gives us that bottom-up feature so that we're not modifying these things in an adjudicatory proceeding. The RCA looks at them. They says if they like it, they can just let it go or they can issue an order adopting it. If they don't like it, they can open an investigation into it, give us comments, and send it back to us and tell us to redraft it. So we took that viewpoint and tried to modify the SB 123 with that. The other thing we looked at is using as short a timelines as possible so that the organization can be nimble and can pivot and respond to things in the system that need to be responded to in a very short time. Those were sort of the basis for it. I think the last pillar was that all the processes that we envision and are trying to develop, from the technical subcommittees to the technical advisory committee to the governing board to the RCA, we've tried to instill this concept of an open, transparent, and inclusive process. We envision drafting reliability standards, having public meetings where people can come in and comment on them, taking that information, redrafting it. That committee moves it up to the committee above it. They do some work on it through an open public process. Eventually it goes to the governing board. If you follow the ERCOT model, which we've been following, all of those meetings are public meetings where anyone can come and testify. So that's sort of the genesis of the comments that you see listed here, and I won't read them to you. We did also add a definition of pre-approval. There's been some controversy or some confusion around siting authority versus pre-approval. In many states, the term siting authority includes the ability to route transmission lines through specific neighborhoods and what color the poles are going to be and what the framing construction is going to be. We have written in a definition that narrowly defines project pre-approval as the RCA providing a finding that the project is necessary and that prudent costs incurred in developing that project can be recovered in rates, and specifically excluding the ability for the RCA to route transmission lines through local areas. One of the themes that you'll hear throughout the document is that we try to preserve local, the ability for local areas to have local criteria that meet their local needs. And so you'll see that theme through the MOU, and we also try to incorporate that in the revisions to SB 123.
That's a good principle. And the reason I brought this question up is because in what you're suggesting here, I see a couple of things that are process issues, and they get down into the how it's done. And I'm trying to keep our statute based on what we want you to do, not necessarily how you do it. And so as we looked at some of these, I'm trying to draw the distinction between those that are highly prescriptive and those that are describing what we want you to do. And as I look down through these, I can see that the MOU was your starting place. Our starting place is a very, very different place. We're starting from how do we direct this to make sure that it happens well. And so you're looking at how does it happen well and how do we get to that directive, right? And so as I just need you to understand, as we get into the rest of the testimony, as I'm going to ask the committee to look at it from the House, I mean, the Senate side, and I would encourage the House also, look at it from what do we want you to do and stay out of how you do it so that what it really turns out well. And so that, at least from my perspective as a senator, I'm going to be looking at it. And so for those of you who have worked so hard on the MOU, good on you, and I think that's a good piece of work, but we won't start from there.
Mm-hmm.
I just wanted you to know that because I was looking at some of these things and I knew we would spend 6 hours just going through these particular issues. So thanks for giving me the pillars on which you built them. And I just need you to know that we're probably working off a different set of pillars, but we want to end up at the same place. So we'll probably be less prescriptive, or we'll probably back off into the principles as much as we can. With that, what I'm going to do is let you three. If you want to make any final comments, I'm going to give a couple minutes, and then I'm going to ask Tony Rizzo if he'll come up. And I've got a couple other people that I'd like to get on testimony before you get out of here.
Brian Hickey from Chugach. I would just say that I think I appreciate where you all are coming from, and I hope that the documents that we provided you give you sort of a window into our thinking more than any prescriptive way that we think you need to do anything. So it's really just a window into the general thinking of the group.
Yeah, and John Burns, to the chair and the rest of the body, you know, I can tell you that all the utilities are poised and prepared to assist in any way to achieve this legislation and to do it as quickly as possible.
Thank you very much. And the PowerPoint was well done. I'm sorry I had to rush you through these last two. We will probably deal with those at another time, but in the template that I tried to give you. And the reason I'm rushing things is because I wanted to get somebody up. Thank you very much for testifying here. I wanted to get Tony Izzo up. He's with Matanusa Electric. And then if there's one of the other utilities who just can't make it, I've got Anna Henderson with the management of Municipal Light and Power, who's online. I've got Brad Jornakic. How do you say it? Janorski. And I've got John Fouts, right? And so if you want to come on up, and I'm sorry that we cut their time down, but hopefully we have now got the template out before us. And so, Tony, you're first up, please.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. My name is Tony Izzo. I'm the Chief Executive Officer of Matanuska Electric Association, Inc., based in Palmer, Alaska. We refer to ourselves as MEA. MEA is probably the second largest utility we serve in the state, electric utility in the state. We serve 66,000+ meters in an area the size of West Virginia. We're also uniquely situated in that we're seeing growth, about 1,000 to 1,200 new services and meters every year. Mr. Chairman and committee members, I really want to start by thanking President Giesel for your leadership in forming the special committee. and arming it with a chair and a group of experienced legislators with a record of getting things done. I'm also very appreciative of Representative Hopkins and the House Special Committee on Energy's leadership introducing HB 151, and applaud the recent action by the committee to amend HB 151 to mirror the language in SB 123 that MEA believes better represents the progression of discussions on this topic. MEA believes, I believe, that the SB 123 and HB 151 is the right vehicle to provide the enabling legislation to make this a reality. And I've heard this afternoon, I believe it was Senator Michiki mentioned 40 years. I'm in my 40th year in the utility business. I've had 20 of those here in the Rail Belt on the gas and electric side. In 2014, the legislature asked the Regulatory Commission to do some analysis on the need for institutional reform in the Rail Belt electric grid. And I think that's what Senator Michiki was referring to regarding, I don't recall the term, but I'll just paraphrase, maybe less than good relationships leading to questionable decisions at times. I believe personally that we as an industry earned that reputation. I also believe that we're past that time. I think for many years now we're past that time. In the lower 48, having come from there in the utility business, I watched it mature over time. And then moving to Alaska in 1999, I realized shortly thereafter that we were about 20 to 30 years behind. The things that I saw at the very beginning of my career were happening here. I'm pleased to report that my counterparts and I have, I think, learned a lot of those lessons and have been able to avoid some of the real pitfalls. The message that that I think you received in 2015 letter from a very high level from the Regulatory Commission of Alaska to the Senate President and the Speaker of the House at that time indicated the need for institutional reform, and it went through a lot of detail that I don't intend on bringing up here, Senator. It, in my opinion, is at a high level accurate. I also believe that we are at a critical point with all the new generation that's been built, with the growth of utilities literally up against each other. We're starting to see acquisition of one utility co-located in the same city. I believe it's time to codify the good behavior that you have seen exhibited for some time. And I think that's what's most critical to me about this legislation, because my counterparts here at the table with me and others, we're trading fuel and power and spinning reserve. We're doing it all the time. But we can do it better. We can do it better with the other stakeholders that have been identified in the presentation. Hearing those voices at the table. And then I think we can do it better, because once it's codified, we cement this. We build the foundation upon which we can build going forward. 40% of the cost of a kilowatt hour in the Rail Belt, most of the Rail Belt, is fuel, just the cost of fuel. My own fuel bill is $50 million per year. Anything that I can do to reduce that fuel by doing what Mr. Hickey indicated, which is using the most efficient generation first, irregardless of where it is placed. We have built this infrastructure now. Let's create a permanent structure in which we can ensure that for future generations, we're making the best of it. Those are my comments. Again, thanks to you all.
And before I go to the other members sitting there, I wanted to give Ann Henderson, who's been online this whole time, if you don't mind, give her a few minutes to go ahead and make her comment. And Anna, can you hear us? Did I catch you at a bad time?
No, thank you. This is Anna Henderson with Municipal Light and Power.
Speak up just a little bit, Anna, and then put yourself on the record. Thank you.
Okay, thank you. And through the chair, this is Anna Henderson. I'm the general manager of Municipal Light and Power. I just wanted to thank you for the opportunity to come before you today and also thank the legislature for their time devoted to this matter. I know your time is valuable, and we appreciate the focus on the Rail Belt electric grid. I apologize that I was not able to attend in person today, so I just wanted to take a brief moment to voice support for the positions that were advanced by Mr. Hickey, Mr. Burns, and Ms. Esty in person today, representing the organizational development team. They are correct. A lot of work has been put into where we are today. I also agree with the comments of Mr. Izzo, and I just wanted to articulate that it's apparent that the institutional regulatory reform in the rail belt is needed to address not only it seems the focus of regulation or regulation to date has been mostly from the financial and rate making matters. They do get into operational matters when issues arise, but that isn't the best way to manage the rail belt. And so what we're trying to achieve is getting some of that regulatory attention focused on reliability, cybersecurity, interconnection, and regional planning, all of which is very important to utility operations and how we serve the public. So I will close in saying that I agree with your desire to tell us what to do versus telling us how to do it, and I envision that this enabling legislation will lead to a robust regulatory process with the Regulatory Commission of Alaska that will add further process and clarification to the regulations, which I know is a multi-year process. So with that, I thank you for your time, and that's my testimony for today.
Thank you, Anna. Representative Fields, did you have a question or a comment?
Question.
Please ask. As long as it's not a 10-hour question.
Quick question for through the chair for Mr. Izzo. Your question about, or your statement about fuel costs made me wonder what potential do you see for your utility and perhaps others to make it easier for consumers to do home weatherization projects that could potentially be repaid over time through their utility bill? Can that be integrated through an IRP-type process? So do you see this whole structure enabling those kind of investments since we're not in a financial place that the legislature is financing such weatherization improvements anymore? Thank you.
Representative Fields, through the chair, I believe that the construct that we have here, and I also appreciate Senator Coghill's, the chair's comments about telling us essentially what to do, not how to do it. What I view this as solving is it creates a one-stop shop across the grid through that planning process with stakeholders. If I need, for example, another 10 megawatts of generation because of the growth that I mentioned, in the past paradigm, many years ago, a single utility would have probably just built the generation that it needed, and we still may need to in the future. But through this process, we will go to the entire broad stakeholder group to say, hey, here's what I need. Because honestly, today, if I needed another 5 megawatts, I'm going to talk to the folks on my right and left and sitting behind me, because that's the lowest cost way to do it. So I may not specifically answer the question about a specific renewable. MEA supports renewables. We're looking at additional 5 megawatts of solar. We think that how they can be integrated onto the system through this process will also facilitate a broader understanding and define collectively when and where these are most appropriate to go, so that we are ultimately providing reliable service at the lowest cost.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Yeah, and we have stated as a policy that renewables are on our list, but reliability is also high on our list. And so we want to grow the state. So John and Brad, which one of you want to go first?
Sure. Thank you, Mr. Chair. Brad Janorski, General Manager, Homer Electric Association, down on the Kenai Peninsula, excuse me, Western Kenai Peninsula. And probably, like Tony, been in the industry a long time. We've got about 35,000 meters. And I think at this time I'm the longest serving general manager on the rail belt. We'll see how long that lasts. So it's been 16 years in running as of 2 weeks from now. As some of you may have met me, like Senator Machicki, when I first got here, I looked a lot younger and glowing dark hair. So with that, Mr. Chair, I do appreciate your earlier comments regarding a growing system. I've seen a lot of change in the last 16 years. As Mr. Izzo referred to, we've seen a lot of change on the rail belt, a lot of differences of personalities, and I can say in the last 5 years, I have not seen the utilities more aligned. It doesn't mean we don't have differences of opinion, but we can work our way through them, as you guys heard earlier during this presentation. A lot of growing changes. In fact, your comment on renewables, I can appreciate. Homer Electric is 90% dependent on natural gas. We spend over $30 million a year, and last year, since our contract was expiring with a now bankrupt fuel supplier, we went out for bids, and does anybody have an idea how many responses we had for over $30 million worth of gas? Senator Machicki got one. One bidder. It's pretty tough to negotiate when you have one supplier. There is nobody more motivated to reduce our dependence on natural gas and focus our renewables as much as any other utility on the rail belt. We are working on several other current projects, both small-scale hydro, landfill gas. We've been following TIDAL for quite some time, and it's really slow and evolving, but we're also moving forward with a very large battery energy storage system, which should come on a year from the summer and should provide benefits for the entire rail belt, much like Golden Valley's BESS has done over the last, since about 2003. Regarding this, I just want to reiterate Homer Electric's view that the organizational development team has done a great job bringing together several very diverse views. I can't reiterate that enough, as I mentioned earlier. I think go back 5 years or beyond that, you would have never gotten this together from the utilities, and I don't think my peers will disagree with me on that. We do support the RRC MOU that was created, and any legislation we are hopeful aligns with that MOU that was crafted, and we are also hopeful that any legislation that passes stays focused, like the RRC, on a reliability organization, not an operating agency or anything like that. Focus on reliability standards, both in the cyber electric interconnection. I think it's very valuable and it creates benefits for our members in this age. Just a few minor questions, and I don't have an answer today on them. One is the comment I said, focusing on a reliability organization solely, but also what impact does this have on Bradley Lake Energy? As some of you know, about 50% of all the power that flows across the Western Kenai Peninsula flows off of our system from Bradley Lake. As you may or may not be aware, the Supreme Court has ruled last year that the RCA does not have jurisdiction over that due to an exemption created by the legislature in 1988. So, and I'm certainly not trying to get Bradley regulated because I like it just where it's at, but its impact on our system and how that falls within the standards is something that I think needs to get reviewed with any pending legislation and where we go from here. And as a sidebar, I think Senator Machicki brought up the question about the CEO as a tiebreaker for good governance. I think as a CEO for over two decades, that is the last job I would ever want, is to be a tiebreaker for my bosses. So something to think about. In summary, I just any proposed changes to the SB 123 that the ODC has come up with, I think are very, ODT, excuse me, are very valid and good changes. And I am hopeful that as this group and the bodies down here in Juneau evaluate any changes, put a lot of thought into it. It's not easy. And I'll be honest with you, and just whether legislation passes this year or next year, I think the MOU is going to stand firm, and the utilities are going to march forward with or without it. One of the questions I ask myself when I read through the pages of Redline, and again, they did a great job, is what are we missing? In addition, what do we have that maybe we don't need? And I don't have the answer today. I do know that thanks to the MOU, with or without the legislation, we're moving forward. We've all agreed to a regulatory compact, and maybe after a year of standing this thing up, we go, maybe it's a little easier then to identify what language we need or don't need, and that's just something for your consideration. But again, the Rail Belt utilities and other stakeholders have done a nice job. So thank you.
Brad, thank you very much. John, you get the last say.
All right. Thank you. So John Fouts, I represent the City of Seward. I'm the electric utility manager, and those of you that are math buffs, I like to refer to it as COS for cosine, maybe not necessarily City of Seward. But first of all, I really, really appreciate the opportunity to come and speak to you. I don't get this opportunity very often, so hear myself speak is something of unique perspective for me. Speaking of perspective, I have a little bit of a different perspective than the other utilities. My utility's quite a bit smaller than everybody else's. We're the only utility on the Rail Belt that purchases power to supply our needs other than generating their own. So I feel like our perspective, it lends a little bit of duality to the process. And with that, I Chair Cockhill, I really appreciated your comments on giving us a format of what to do, not how to do it. The utilities, I've met a lot of really, really smart people working for the utilities. They really do know what to do and how to do it. But giving us a deadline, I think, is something that we as utilities could use and benefit from to help get us across the finish line. So that's kind of the thing that I would like to portray here, is that I do support this. I think it's an important piece of legislation, and just don't leave us behind as far as contributing comments and helping with the process. I think we do offer some unique perspective from the utility standpoint, but I also realize that it's not the only perspective and the only way to do it. So thank you.
Thank you very much. And for all, thank you very much. I think, first of all, it has been enlightening. This is not necessarily our world, but we have to find out how do we get direction to you. A rule of general applicability, knowing that it's a growing process and has been for years. And for those of us who are getting a longer and a tooth around here, we know that it's been a long time coming. But at the same time, there's a lot of people in Alaska who need to know that tremendous effort has been put forward and that this is a structure for you to work through and work off of. And so I think the understanding, I think, became very, very clear today. And then the other question that we have is how other stakeholders see it. So the next meeting we'll have is stakeholders that are from REAP and from AEA, independent power producers, and public interest group, who will also bring their perspective to the table as we begin to digest all these perspectives, knowing that every day we want these power lights to come on. We want to flip the switch and the power come on. And by the way, just before I came down here, I was in a six-hour power outage. Had nothing to do with the reliability. Had everything to do with a transformer, I think, that went. But froze the house up. So I know, and most of us in the cold weather know, how important the reliability is, whether we're running a fish processing plant or a LNG facility or just a house. We depend upon and are happy for you. Like I said before, we know it. You hear us when we don't have it, and hardly ever when we do have it. So For that, we're grateful. We will continue this meeting next on January 29th with those other interest groups. Thank you to the utilities for the united voice that we heard today and the thorough voice, plus the recommendations. I didn't want to disrespect them, but I knew that that was going to dominate the time if we didn't get through to this other testimony. Thank you very much. We'll see you another joint meeting with the House on the 29th in this room. We'll do it at, I think, 3:30 again. Anything from you, Chairman?
I think we're good on time, but I also appreciate the work you have all done leading up to this effort. It is a big statewide issue that we're dealing with here because while it is rail belt issues, all six of you are along the rail belt. It does impact both the economy of the state and as well the power cost equalization to address rural costs as well. So hopefully we can find ways to help all of the ratepayers in Alaska through this work. Thank you very much.
Thank you. With that, we're adjourned.